Hey, this is Jim McDonald. Welcome to episode 104 of the PowerCast. This time we've got Mr. Bryce Lewis. Bryce is all kinds of smart, and I kind of wanted to call this episode Piss Excellence, and I think you'll know why kind of toward the end, and maybe when you see the picture that comes out with this episode. Anyway, our sponsors for this episode, HowMuchABench.net, ThePowerMagazine.com, and CavemanCoffeeCo.com. Also, if you can hit up a five-star rating or review on iTunes, we would definitely appreciate that. All right, on with this episode.
Feeling a little gassy. This is so weird.
Gassy?
Must be all that air I'm breathing making me feel gassy.
It's like protein leftovers on this. I put my cold brew. It's not good.
Oh, recorded live.
Yeah, God.
Isn't everything recorded live, though?
Yeah, that's ironic.
Got him.
Yeah, somebody on YouTube said, what's the point of the intro if they just talk through it? I said, the point is that we talk through it.
True.
Yeah, fuck you guys. We're going to do what we fucking want to do.
We hate Matt Nickerson. We don't want to hear his fucking fat voice.
Yeah, I might get diabetes just listening to him.
His fat, bloated voice.
Dude, we have so many beverages on our table right now.
We do.
We're just fucking got options.
Yeah,
that's what it's
hydrated,
about.
Motherfucker. Yeah.
Stay hungry, my friends.
That's Furious Pete.
Stay hungry.
That's Furious Pete. You can't steal his line.
No, I just got it up here. Someone's feeding him info.
Yeah.
Isn't that a movie?
Was it is.
A movie
it
that
is.
In? Yeah,
it's
with
a movie. Arnold Strong.
Mr. Ernie.
And
it was just his birthday.
Before he was Schwarzenegger.
It was just his birthday, what, last week?
Mm. Yes.
When we were in L.A.?
Yes, it was his birthday last
He's
week.
He's 487 years old.
Yeah. 60.
Terminator?
5? 69.
Did anyone see the Terminator?
With
newest?
His maid.
I did.
Good?
Yeah, of course. Oh, the new
newest.
One. No, I haven't seen it.
Terminator 7.
Here's what I think about it. If you're not too invested in any of the other movies, but you like the idea, you'll like it.
Hmm.
It's a good popcorn movie. It's not like a great...
Love popcorn.
And you eat too much popcorn and fart into your seat the entire time?
Up.
Big guns, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I got to make an announcement before we start this shit. HowMuchABench.net. Use code POWERCAST for 10% off. That's POWERCAST. HowMuchABench.net. Go get yourself some bullshit. And we're here with Bryce Lewis, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey!
Hey-o! You know Bart Kwan and Gio.
Yeah.
Gio just is like the hype man of the year. You say anything and she'll just start fucking wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we're not sure why, but that's what she
does. It
makes
you feel really good about yourself.
You know what you guys need is that air horn sound on here? Like the
that's what she does.
Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah, the EDM like Brazilian
yeah,
horn.
Yeah, exactly.
She it's has so that good. Built in.
And you put it on like at the worst possible moments.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
people
like,
are crying.
Oh. Yeah.
Mike almost blew into an underage girl's conch at the CrossFit Games. Yeah. Speaking of weird sounds.
We were simply kissing babies, shaking hands. I think we were taking a couple pictures with people.
That was inappropriate.
And some girl with her conch out.
Conch.
Mm-hmm. Came up and asked me to
it's
blow
like,
in
blow
it.
Into this. I'm like, there's a camera here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she could have been 18.
Was it hanging out the bottom of some of those Katie Hogan shorts?
Yeah, it could have been.
She had
yeah.
her conch in her
Copyright.
Hands. In her hands.
Short shorts.
Yeah, it was inappropriate.
Oh, my God.
And then she went and showed Mark something. I was talking to her mom.
Yeah, well, she was showing me how to blow into it. Yeah. She was like saying that you say a certain word into it, and
it's
then
a
you
good
blow
family
into
time.
It. Yeah.
Blow me.
Yeah. I was just like, what the hell's going on? Yeah. And then...
We do need a soundboard.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, samples.
Yeah, we would be pushing it way too much.
Well, somebody made a... Squans.com is a sample board of us three from the podcast.
Really?
That's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that goes squats and all that shit. Yeah.
I know.
Hey, now.
Mark says something about his phone being filled with cum and something else.
Who had the time to make a soundboard of
Amazing.
You guys?
Amazing.
Yeah.
What a waste of time. We're pieces of shit.
People are wasting their fucking lives
like,
away.
I'll use this a lot.
Uh-oh. What happened?
People are wasting their fucking time.
He got rid of it. Squans. Maybe? Oh, you're missing an A.
Oh, yeah. I'm missing an A.
Extra A's.
All right. Just to give you some iron cred before so
wow,
we know.
Someone bought the website.
Yeah, and then put our name on it.
Wow.
That's Bryce, before people disregard every single thing you say,
yeah.
Let's just give you a little bit of iron cred here. What's your best deadlift?
740.
Best bench?
455.
Best squat?
625.
There we go.
Yep.
There you go, you motherfuckers. Listen to what he has to say.
And in the last meet, he went 9 for 9 and did a 617 squat, knee sleeves, USAPL, a 446 bench press, and a 722 deadlift. He did pull the deadlift sumo, so that's highly frowned upon. And if you guys want to tune out now, then we totally understand.
Weighing about 215 pounds or so.
Yeah, on the money. Yeah.
You'll see the pictures, but we did drug test him earlier. We did watch him pee in the cup. So.
Every time you come to Super Training, we want to know how much we raise your testosterone. So we test you on the way in, you on the way out.
He didn't have illegal ratios, but the pee test itself was very positive.
Oh, it was a very positive experience for me.
It was a positive experience.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, one of the more positive experiences I've ever had.
Yeah. I know. That's it. All right, podcast over.
Yeah, and that's it, ladies and gentlemen, from Bryce Lewis. Thank you very much, Denver, Colorado.
So, yeah, I'm a strength coach out of Denver and had a background in volleyball before I moved into natural bodybuilding.
What do guys wear in volleyball?
Board shorts and like a sleeveless or a sleeved athletic.
That's not where your spandex
tight.
Yeah, no. Okay. No.
Spandex came after.
Yeah, where spandex was afterwards. Underwear stuff come from.
Okay, just for our listening audience, how tall are you?
I am 5'6".
Which is just enormous for a volleyball player.
So you got hops is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. I had to make up for in jumps what I lacked in height. So, and often, in a lot of ways, I think it made me work harder, you know, having to deal with a lot of the other guys on the team just jumping higher. So,
what's the average teammate? 6'2 to 6'6?
6 foot, somewhere right around there, So our middles were up at 6'7", and some of the back row players were down at 5'8", 5'7", somewhere around there. So, indoor volleyball is six people on a court, and you kind of rotate around, and you've got, in some cases, specialists for front row, specialists for back row. And, so I played setter and right side hitter, and so you end up blocking some pretty tall guys, so I had to jump pretty high.
Yeah. You played from the back?
I didn't. Wow. I played from the back and played from the front.
Why?
Wow. Hey, now.
He kind of covered all his bases. I like that.
Covered a lot
of ground. Of people obviously are familiar with volleyball. People have seen it. People have played it. But what type of athletes are in volleyball? I'd imagine there's some real mutants in there.
Yeah, so in a lot of cases you get some transfers over from basketball or track and field or things like that, like explosive sports. But
people that can't do real sports, I understand.
If you look at like the Olympic team, for instance, it's just super tall, like lanky guys, and they've got some muscle on them, but it's really not a priority. It's just priority about being fast and
first step.
Yeah, exactly. So big steps and height is really the huge priority.
Yeah, I know a lot of basketball guys that were good, but maybe couldn't make it to the next level, and then they turned into really good volleyball players because they already had a fast, quick first step and could jump out of the roof.
Exactly. And on the female side, you see kind of the same thing. Like some of the best female players, like just walked on from track and field. And they just picked it up super quick and became all-stars.
Great spectator sport.
What about beach volleyball?
Only women.
Oh, yeah.
I suck at beach volleyball. It's a different game. And competitively, there's two people. So the whole dynamic of the game is a little bit different. The court is a little bit smaller. Uh-huh. And you don't get a lot of kind of the power plays that you see on indoor. And I'm not sure if you guys have a chance to watch like actual six-man or six-woman indoor, but it's a total different monster. Like there's a lot of strategy and complex attacks.
People flying
like
all over the fucking place.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I haven't watched a ton of it, but what I've seen, there's people just flying all over the fucking place.
Yeah, it's a blast. And I think people get kind of the wrong idea sometimes when they think of like, oh, men's volleyball is like, just like pansy stuff. But no, like these are athletes and they're in damn good shape and doing a really good job.
Did it help you to have that background transferring over into some powerlifting?
I want to say so. You get a lot of explosive work, and my start into lifting weights really was when I was 18, a freshman in college, and I wanted to get stronger for volleyball. So I was looking up workouts on bodybuilding.com and, trying to figure out. So pick up some generic training plans. And,
right.
I noticed my vertical went up.
Anybody popular at the time that you can think of that you were trying to follow?
On the volleyball side?
Just on bodybuilding.com. Like, was there anybody in particular that, or even like T Nation or something like that?
Sure.
Was there any sort of workouts you were?
There was an animal barbell workout. It was like a 5-day kind of upper lower split thing, and just kicked my ass. It was, typical giant sets.
You're like,
on
this
leg
hurts
presses.
Really bad. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm
McGrath
crawling out of the gym, I'm doing a great job.
right. Yeah, just making yourself so sore that you can't even fucking walk.
Exactly. Killed it today, bro.
Things have obviously changed.
Can't sit on the toilet.
Yeah, that's still like popular. like memes or whatever, like yeah. leg day, crawling home. Like, that's probably not how you're going to make progress.
Yeah.
How are you going to squat in 3 days?
Yeah. It might exactly. be necessary for, you know, some of the bodybuilders that are trying to turn pro and their yeah. legs are a weak point, maybe, yeah. right? They might.
But I bet you they don't even feel that way because they're so conditioned to yeah. sets yeah. of 20 or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, there's some cool studies, too, that show, like, volume-equated training between super high rep sets and super low rep and higher load. But the volume is equated, and they're finding that the overall hypertrophy is really similar between them.
But they do, meaning 5 sets of 3, 3 sets of 5, but yeah. if the volume is overall the exact same.
Yeah, exactly. So volume in this case is sets times reps times weight. And it's a good way of comparing training approaches as far as what's going to be successful for an athlete. And the lower repetition, heavier weight group had the same hypertrophy, but they're also gaining strength
right.
by a pretty significant margin. So it's kind of turning a lot of the traditional training approaches on their head a little bit.
A lot of people doing 7 sets of 3, 10 sets of 1,
yeah.
trying to have handle a heavier load rather than go 3 sets of 10.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're talking more about like the extreme examples, like 3 sets of 20, drop mm-hmm. sets, that kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
I mean, 3 sets of 10 still has a huge place in training. Hey.
I'm going to call. Larry Lurker's calling
Lurker
me.
Call
Larry,
me.
I'm fucking recording, bro. What do you need from me?
That's great. He wants to get on the podcast.
Yeah.
He's got a live question.
I know.
Yeah.
If I could make it sound good, I wish I could.
It probably would work, but I don't know. It's up to you.
Larry might be naked.
Oh, is he trying
to
FaceTime you?
Let you know that would be naked even better. Right now.
What are you wearing?
Larry Lurker Skypes in.
What are you wearing?
That would be a little bit weird.
So tell us about your hobbies, like man squashing.
So
I've never heard of this.
Do you want to talk about that?
Well,
now?
I want to talk about man squashing. We can get all back right. to your expertise in a second, but man squashing is what you seem to be an expert in and informed me and Mark already on it a little bit. But Jim, I'm sure, will love
yeah,
the
he
topic.
He claimed he had like a friend of a friend.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah. My cousin
yeah,
told
me. Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
My buddy asking for a friend.
So I had a friend coach of mine tell me about one of his female athletes who got invited to participate in man squashing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do not Google that right now.
dare you. Bunch of perverts.
People so, always want to know what's on my screen. It's not this.
Anyway. Exactly. So what is it? It's sexy female women in big 4x4 trucks running over guys.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So the,
awesome.
The female gets paid like 10 to 20 grand or something like that, and the guys get paid $50,000 to $70,000.
All you bums out there trying to make a living.
How is there so much money
it's
involved?
Crazy.
Okay, people are going to, as soon as this comes yeah. out, they're going to ask how they can get involved.
Well, yeah,
Mark
yeah,
and
sure.
I already talked about, you know, like powerlifters.
I didn't believe it.
Run over my nuts.
Like,
but like, really, like run over with a big, like,
yeah, yeah.
how
yeah,
much
just
damage
some fetish
are
or something
about?
Like that.
Probably a lot.
You know, submissive, that kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of damage. Mark and I were talking about like powerlifters, you know, finding coins in their couch just to pay for a meet. Where Pornhub is sending people to the moon to fuck, to make a fucking video in outer space. Yeah. 50 grand.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah, the Pornhub's yeah. making a thing in outer space. I guess I read a little more details.
A dick
somebody
shuttle.
Informed me that they're not actually going to be in outer space. They're going to be in that like upper layer or
yeah.
whatever.
But
still,
come on. Even if you're doing a porn
though?
Stratosphere.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I think they're going weightless.
You're pushing
yeah,
the limits.
Outer
now.
Stratosphere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Weightless.
It's like... the movie Apollo 13 was all the weightless scenes were filmed like that, where they go away
yeah,
up
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
then
but
when
not actually
drop,
in.
You become weightless for
so they're gonna do that
short period of time.
They're gonna have a weightless fuck
throw up
and then, but 50 grand to get run over by a truck to have somebody else beat off to you.
Yeah,
it's
you know,
pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm just thinking about bones. I'm thinking about like legs. We're talking.
What
pelvises?
About longevity
like,
of what? Career? How many trucks could you take in a year?
So we watched like this trailer footage of it, which was just ridiculous.
There had to be trailers involved. That's
yeah.
Truck the woman was smoking a cigarette and like yelling. It was pretty great.
They put her stats like 5'9", 160.
Yeah.
5 out of 5 crusher.
Yeah.
She had
her
a rating.
Her violent level.
Yeah.
She had like a 4-star violent level.
She's like, I'm going to crush you, bitch. It was awesome. It's pretty cool.
On her way up to the what crushing platform, does she like hit a thing where she gets a power up?
No,
and...
she was just sitting in her truck smoking a cigarette looking so gross.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What have we sunk to? Oh my God.
Yeah, man. Regular sex doesn't cut it.
So yeah, there's a lot of variety out
there.
Yeah,
Bryce is into some weird shit.
No.
His poor wife has
so
to
that's
listen
Bryce
to
Lewis, ladies and gentlemen.
Sarah, I love you.
I didn't come to California to get run over, I promise.
She's I'm only
like,
in a wheelchair because
hell?
I had an accident. I had a terrible accident. When I was on the show.
Have you ever seen like the actual like running over? Like, have you ever seen?
I was waiting for that when the video. We didn't really see anything. I don't know if I want to see it.
No, like, it was just like a promo video or something like that.
You probably have to pay. If they're paying,
I'm freaked out by this. I'm done.
There's no way it could be free. Something that great.
Weird.
Jesus. Well, where does the money come from? Right.
That's what. Yeah, maybe views.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, how many views going to be getting?
Way more than Supertrain and .TV.
Jesus Christ on a cross.
So sad.
Damn.
So sad.
Well, we're off to a good start.
How did we get here?
Yeah, running over somebody's balls.
People are disappointed. You recently moved to Denver.
Yeah.
Before you were in Denver, you were in L.A.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing kind of the online coach deal?
Since October of 2013, we started a company called The Strength Athlete, and we work primarily with powerlifters, although we take other strength sports as well, and some physique-based sports as well, bodybuilders, figure athletes, fitness, that kind of thing, but really focusing on powerlifters and helping them prep for competitions, prepping their year as far as yearly periodization goes, even multi-year stuff as far as that goes. And it's just been an incredible experience so far. I'm working with four coaches, and we have one intern, Joe Stank. And Hanny, hey, what's up, guys?
Joe Stank.
I'm sure they're listening, or they will be listening to this, so saying hey. And we work with around 120 athletes around the world.
That's awesome.
So it's email-based primarily, although we do lots of recorded video and have athletes take footage of themselves training, that kind of thing.
Getting run over by trucks and whatnot.
Getting run over. That's
like,
really
Hanny, you weren't supposed to sell me that video. What are you doing?
Oops.
And here we are prepping a lot of athletes for Raw Nationals around the corner. We're entering a team there and – you know, just continuing to work with lots of athletes and refine stuff. And one of the big things that we are passionate about is giving back to the community and making sure that, we're not just taking from this, we're giving back to the sport that's given us so much. So we put out freebies to help people choose attempt selection better or create their own programming.
Yeah, even on your Instagram, there's a lot of information. You show all your warm-ups and all the different things that you do to prepare for a workout and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a passion for us. It's not just a job. And honestly, I'm just incredibly lucky to be able to do this for a living. You know, as I'm sure you guys are doing what you love too.
How did you
just not making a living at it?
How do you guys get on the same page? You guys have meetings about this kind of stuff? Happen weekly, monthly?
So we've got a little coaches Facebook chat where we're talking like every 5 minutes basically throughout the working day, and then we say goodnight to each other. It's kind of bro-ish,
right,
romance,
right.
But
love you, dude.
Every once in a while we have monthly meetings where we talk about our approaches, what's new with our athletes. Do we have problems that we need to get together to solve for our athletes? So we're not just, five individual coaches. We put our heads together to, have an athlete make weight or get around a plateau for some athlete. So our approaches are different enough for athletes that there's some individualization, and we don't feel like a lockdown into having to do something specific for athletes, but flexible enough that we get to be personalized with our own approaches. But still adhering to scientific principles and making sure that we're tracking volume and that we have the athlete's best interests in mind.
Yeah, you guys are super analytical, yeah?
It's fun for us, yeah. So, Excel is kind of a big hobby of mine, so I like playing around with it and putting out freebies and making things look better and better. Like, with a little bit of a background in graphic design, some of the visual elements, like it has to look good and be functional as well as far as creating approaches for athletes. So there's a lot of that.
Because everybody's down to an infographic now. How about everything?
Yeah, we need infographics for everything.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
we don't understand it at all.
Yeah,
we don't science anymore without an infographic. Do you guys do diet too, or just?
Yeah, so everyone does diet. We don't do like a separate training and diet kind of thing.
Okay.
We feel like it's all part of the same thing about getting an athlete from point A to point B. So we try not to separate that. You know, regardless of whether they want guidance on diet or not, we say, hey, if you want it, it's there for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're not dealing with these people in person. Do you ever get to the point where you're like, God, you're being such a bitch. What the fuck? Like,
yes.
Well, I mean, mostly we've had dieting athletes that are just like, pissy because they're low calorie. But no, I mean, they appreciate what we're doing for them. And, we require athletes to report on a weekly basis, and they send us, feelings about how the week went, how did training go, what was tough for you? What was easy for you? What are you thinking about? How was technique? How's sleep quality? And just kind of, you know, run the gamut of questions there. And some athletes send in like structured, you know, here's question A, here's answer A. But some is just more free flowing. But, it, you know, no one's really kind of pissy like that. It's all, you know, we're all on the same team.
So how many more questions per week do you get from a newer athlete versus someone who is more experienced?
The reports end up taking on a little bit of a different quality. So for the newer athletes, I like to see footage of everything, even the stuff that like you think someone would have great form on, like a tricep pushdown, just so that I can kind of check that off my list and be like, oh, I don't have to worry about, you know, Jimmy doing a tricep pushdown anymore. Mm-hmm. And then so we kind of whittle down. So I start with kind of big reports from athletes, and then we work our way down to a little bit more free form. So with my own coach now, I send him like a 5 to 10 minute video once every 2 or 3 weeks or something like that. It's kind of more informal, and there's less kind of micromanaging changes to training as we go forward from there.
And who's your coach, just so people know?
Eric Helms from 3D Muscle Journey, who is, if he's ever in the States, I'd love you guys to get on. I know you've had Alberto Nunez on here before. Mm-hmm. He's part of the same team. And Jeff Alberts and Brad Loomis, they're all good guys. And all of us coaches have kind of had a mutual background in 3D Muscle Journey, which we kind of feel are our mentors. So it's nice that we have created this extended family, and we still trade things back and forth with them all the time and collaborate.
They're just a little bit more bodybuilding based.
Yeah, although they do have a fair amount of powerlifters, they're very, you know, they're good on the bodybuilding side, way more than we are.
How do people, you know, find out about you guys? There's, you know, seems like everybody has jumped into the online coaching thing. So, you know, how do people finding out about you guys, and also what makes you different?
So the easiest way to find out about us is to do a Google search for online powerlifting coaching or powerlifting coaching, or you can go directly to thestrengthathlete.com, and you know, you can read up about us and find the application there, different things like that. We try to be as professional as possible in every step of the process. So, you know, it's not just, you know, PayPal our money and we'll send you a program and bye-bye.
Yeah.
It's a pretty intricate process, and we're really trying to develop a coach-athlete relationship and something that that you can build on and that we can mentor and continually teach athletes. So we're looking to create relationships with our athletes. We're not just looking to see numbers on a page and respond to those numbers on a page. So, you know, our athletes are persons on, you know, on the other side of the planet even.
Right.
And we can get really close relationships with a lot of these people that end up, you know, becoming something more.
Yeah.
Does that become beneficial in terms of, you know, being able to sell them, you know, kind of multiple times, you know, like rather than just saying, oh, it's a 12-week program, you kind of work with them for 2-3 years instead?
Yeah, so we have just a ton of athletes that end up staying with us for a long period of time.
Cool.
We ask for like 8 weeks minimum to sign up, just so that, you know, if we create an approach for them, they're actually going to go through with it, and we can kind of build toward those longer periods of time. But after that, they just continue monthly for as long as they want coaching for. And, you know, we don't put an end date on. Because for powerlifting, regardless of whether you're competing or not, we kind of structure training similarly over, you know, 12, 16-week cycles that lead up into some kind of test over the course of a year. Whether that ends up being in a powerlifting meet or just in the gym.
Yeah. And you're all competitors, yeah? All
yeah.
Coaches?
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool. Maybe we, rare nowadays.
We really want to make sure that we're doing what we're talking about.
Yeah. And all pretty good competitors.
Yep. Yeah, and a few of us are coaches in the USAPL too. Not coaches, referees, certified referees. So we're able to talk about depth in the squat and the rules and make sure that everyone's following what we're after.
You're very analytical. You mentioned a few times over the week, over the course of the week, studies that you've read, surveys and things like that, even to the point where last night we were talking about people missing limbs, legs and arms and things like that, seeing some adaptive athletes at the CrossFit Games, and you started whipping out some different studies and stuff. Where does some of that come from? Is that just an interest of yours? You like to read a lot? Or
yeah, well, last night we were talking about a study from Ramachandran, V.S. Ramachandran, a neuroscientist.
And, oh, yes, of course. Well,
neuroscience is a big passion of mine, too. I was, for a while, going to go to school for biochemistry and kind of try to pursue something in neuroscience, because that's another passion of mine, like consciousness and how the hell
nerd
this, you know, brain produces the state that we're in. And the fact that you and I are having a conversation here is, you know, it's mind blowing.
The like, brain's the as most in complex the state thing of California,
different state.
So, you know, I have kind of an analytic mind as well, but I also feel like the science and exercise science can really lend something good to the conversation of, you know, gym lifts. And it's not like, hey, let's only do what the science says, but I right. think it should be a good part of that conversation.
Well, I think it's cool too, because it's a lot of it's new.
Like, yeah.
Powerlifting's not that old of a sport.
It's blowing up right now.
It's the world has now progressed to a point where lifting heavy, running is now a hobby. We make enough money and have enough shelter that we don't have to hunt our food. So then we can worry about how to run and whatever better, rather than now I'm just running to fucking kill this elk.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, even in the last, 40 years or something like that, I mean, gyms really only came about in kind of the modern form when, in the 70s, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. And they got popular maybe in the 90s, and creatine came out. And
Then that was it.
And then boom.
And then now we're all fucking
fucking done deal.
Steroids. quick point. Bryce is wearing spandex next to me. First time guest has done that. And I believe he's in his squatting shoes as well, just in case he needs to hit depth. Something weird
I'm
happens.
Ready.
Bullet come flying or something.
I think he didn't want to get covered up by the desk here.
Well, also, I look taller compared to you guys.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I'm going shoeless to try to even it out.
I'm going pantsless.
So is Bryce.
I'm waiting for someone to do that.
So as a referee in the USAPL, fix squat judging for us across all federations.
Just hit a goddamn red light.
It's
as simple as that. Red light.
It's
fuck
pretty
you,
darn
motherfucker.
Simple. You know, we're looking for the hip crease to be below the top of the knee, and like.
But where is that hip crease? I mean, where is it on everybody? Where is it? Can you like? It's right here on every person.
6 inches left, 2 inches right. north of the wiener.
Well, when we see someone hit a squat, like that's when you can see it. And, you know, there's going to be a range of an inch or two where it's iffy, like yeah. for sure.
Bigger quads, a little yeah. guy who has some body fat.
But
might
referees
be covering some
are supposed to give the athlete the benefit of the doubt,
yeah.
At least in the USAPL. So, you know, if you see it, it's right on the line there, you give the athlete the benefit of the doubt. That being said, if it's in the rules, we want to uphold a certain standard and make sure that we're judging all athletes fairly. So that's really what it's about.
In judging, I find that if a squat looks good, then it is good. But I may not be able to track those 2 points.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that looks
yeah.
good.
I mean, you know, you're somebody who's looking at studies and stuff. There's, like, evidence that you can't look in two places at one time. You know, so in my opinion, the rules are just retarded in the fact that you have to look at the hip crease and the knee at the same time. You can kind of see whether a squat is like good or not, quote unquote good or not.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's never really definitive in my opinion, especially when someone leans forward and you have a lot of different things going on. Sometimes you have a lot of, the bar will travel a great distance.
There's spotters in the way.
Somebody might have a bar travel 18 inches versus somebody else have it travel 12 inches, but somebody else's hips may move a lot more efficiently than the other. So it always gets to be a little hairy when it comes to like trying to really judge those squats. And I just wonder, you know, what's a better way? I do think there are a lot of better ways to go about judging it. I just don't think anybody really cares to actually take the time to fix it. I think, you know, lines on a singlet and things of that nature would help. I think that
you've even talked about some kind of weird laser. Like
well,
we've got a few friends
nature.
Like trying to do something with engineering.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, you run into a cost problem there, and then an right. implementation,
right.
yeah,
right.
adjusting
problem.
Per height,
yeah.
per
right.
hip.
Like
per...
you can't have a meet unless you
right.
you got our laser guidance.
Which
also
is a bad
too,
idea.
Also,
if I'm
too,
an investor.
You know, just in my opinion, like, what's the point of having three judges? Can't one person just judge it correctly? You know, like, why does it have to be like a,
yeah.
you know what I mean? I do agree that there should be somebody there to kind of back it up and
right.
somebody there to say, hey, you know, we saw this kind of thing.
That's
almost like in the NFL when someone calls a touchdown, and the other guy says, hey, man, it really wasn't a touchdown.
Or I was going to say baseball, right? The main ump calls the strike, but if he doesn't see it, doesn't the first base ump say
yeah,
something?
Yeah, he checks them. Yeah.
Depending
checks
upon
them.
Which
yeah.
side they're
I don't know shit
yeah.
about baseball,
yeah.
but I know something yeah. like that happens. Yeah.
But also.
It just ends up being like a little bit of a jury type thing. And it's just
yeah,
that.
Well,
but that's not unique to powerlifting, too. I mean,
right.
if we look at
figure
so,
skating.
So many sports have
yeah.
like a jury, you know, if we talk about gymnastics,
yeah.
Diving, you know, all
right.
these things have like just a panel and they rate.
Which are, seem
rate
like
your score.
Subjective.
Right.
But they're still kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
objective
yeah,
sports, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
It's on the edge.
I haven't taken a look too much at
those
the
seem like they would be a lot
lifting.
Harder to judge, though. Like figure skating and diving and shit seem like it would be real complicated. That shit's moving
yeah.
fast.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot going on. There's not that much going on with powerlifting.
Well, I mean, you still have judges that need to be certified, too. So they go through a process, they take tests, they have to redo their certification. There's kind of a progression from a local level to a national level, that kind of thing.
Do they do any kind of, like, inter-rater reliability in USAPL? Or
If you consistently perform badly and kind of some of the other judges see and are like, you know, why is the person calling so many reds or so many whites or something like that? I mean, like, there are some things in place to be like, we need to talk about this with you, but that's not usually a problem in the USAPL.
I think the movement of raw lifting has really helped a lot, because I think that just not that you have to hit depth in order to do the squat properly, but it just kind of feels better, you know, to break parallel. You can kind of rebound off your own body a little bit, even if you're not like dive bombing.
Yeah.
You get to a certain depth and it actually just kind of feels better. You get a little stretch reflex and you come back up out of the bottom.
Yeah. There's a big pushback now to be like, you know, depth or die or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Depth before dishonor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, Ed Cohn has kind of said that the emphasis gets placed on the lifter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's always kind of said that, and I've always agreed with that, because I just think that the judging part of it can be difficult at times.
What do you mean? Like it's your responsibility to hit depth, and if you didn't, it's your fault.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to do the lift correctly.
Sure.
If you want to try to shortchange it and get away with one, then that's, you know, up to you, I guess.
You're running a risk, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. We want athletes to do in training is to leave no doubt. Don't leave it up to the judges, basically, is what we're after.
Right.
What is something you can do for an athlete that's struggling with depth? What are some things that you – I know it's a great big conversation, but like, what are two or three things that you like to try to do with athletes that are struggling to get low enough?
Be honest with yourself and use video.
No.
So, you know, take video from the right height. Don't take it from a high height. Like, put a camera or a phone directly at where you'd be hitting depth and just be honest. Is this high? Is this not? And then take steps to make a change so that when you come – time to actually compete in a competition, you're not going to be disappointed or sidelined or lie to yourself or lie to other people.
That's the toughest part, is try to make a change.
True.
You know, that's the hardest thing to do, is to say, you know what, I love using 315, but I just need to use 275.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
I need to take weight off the bar to get
like
better.
It's sacrificing pounds.
Yeah.
You know, but actually it's getting closer to what you are hitting, what you should be hitting in competition.
Right. Yeah, red lights and you didn't squat it anyway.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It seems like you've made a lot of progress.
The only lifts that count are the ones you make.
It seems like you've made a lot of progress over the last year and a half or so, 2 years. What has been the evolution of that? How has that happened, basically?
So one of the cool things is just being in a caloric surplus for a good amount of time, like putting yourself in.
Eating like a hog.
Yeah. eat more than you need, basically. And we've increased volume quite a bit. So instead of squatting.
Let's just talk a little bit more about the eating, because that gets me excited.
Yeah.
Are you trying to eat like six times a day? Are you waking up early and getting meals in? Are you shoveling down a meal before you go to bed? Is there some ice cream involved, or what are you doing exactly?
There is ice cream for sure.
He's in.
But no, it's not about how many meals you eat. It's just, you know, we have our athletes tracking macros. So it's a flexible dieting approach. Mm-hmm. And we're just looking to kind of monitor that. And we take a look at 7 days weigh-in. So we have the athlete weigh themselves every day. But there's so many fluctuations on a day-to-day basis that we kind of look at what's going
on. Don't worry about it too much.
Between every 7 days. Yes, we can see a little broader pattern. And from there, we'll make decisions. You know, if you're staying the same or you're going down, and the goal is to be going up slowly, we'll add in some food. And we try not to micromanage those changes too much. So we don't want, you know, plus 10 grams of carbs this week, minus 10 the next week, plus 10 the next week. So, you know, we try to be a little less finicky with those changes.
Especially with a strength athlete, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a bodybuilder, maybe you got to do some weird shit.
Sure. But. Or if, you know, the goal is to be at 5%, you know, at a certain period of time.
Which we all walk around at anyway. So
well,
we
I know
care.
Mark's always 5%.
When you –
5%er for life.
Uh-huh. When you, you know, have people make some of these changes to their diet – is there any shock to them, like that you're asking them to eat more fat, or you're asking them to eat more carbs? Is there something that they're like, oh my God?
A lot of times we're lucky that the athletes that end up looking for our services are athletes that already are pretty familiar with flexible dieting approaches. So we don't have to explain what a carb is or what protein is, or, you know, even how to track. Most athletes that have come to us already know how to track these things. So we don't have to start from square one. And from there, it's just a matter of adjusting things to not be too much of a shock, because what we want is high levels of adherence. We want the athlete to stick to what we're trying to have them do. And throwing something out of left field at them, like, I want you eating only fat and taking in, you know, just carbs, well, that's not going to do too good, you know. Right. And, you know, they're going to end up lying to you, or they're going to end up with poor energy levels or poor performance or all these other things. So with every athlete, when they start up with us, we have an initial Skype call. And that's a little bit different from a lot of other services. So I don't feel, and the rest of the coaches don't feel, like if we just had an application, we could get enough information to be able to create an approach for them and get to know them as a person.
Right.
So we have like an hour call with someone that we talk with them about, you know, what's their past, what are their goals, you know, do they have meets coming up, how's nutrition, do they have any injuries, you know, what's training been like. So we get a little bit more of a complete picture and just get to meet face to face, and which is a pretty cool thing and kind of in line with what we're after. And as part of that, we talk about nutrition, and, you know, where their past is, so that we can make interventions that more closely align with what they've been doing.
When you have someone who's like maybe under eating a little bit and they go into a surplus, are you seeing quick gains?
Yeah. So we sometimes see that in athletes as far as, you know, putting them in a caloric surplus. So it's a complete package. How's the training affecting them and the nutrition affecting them, right, too? Sometimes we have athletes that, you know, have been under feeding and now we're going into a caloric surplus, and they're being like, I can't fit all this food into a day, you know, and we have to come up with strategies to help them eating. That. I'm sure, yeah.
A lot of that
specialty.
Yeah.
Obviously training volume and calories, whatever, depends on genetics, yeah.
Yeah.
And so your genetics are that of the Munsters. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so my grandpa, Al Lewis.
I thought you were going to say Ray Lewis.
Grandpa.
So you're, yeah. Oh, it's not Ray Lewis.
That is amazing.
Yeah, he played Grandpa Al on the Munsters.
So your grandpa is Grandpa Munster.
Huge fan. Huge fan. That's amazing.
Shout out to Grandpa Munster.
Shout out.
That's amazing.
It's a fucking awesome show.
Are you pretty close with your family, with your grandpa and stuff?
He passed away
sorry to hear that.
A while ago. It's okay. Yeah. But, yeah.
Pull him up there, Jim. Pull him up. We got to look him up.
Grandpa Munster.
But you... I knew this because we asked if you grew up in L.A., and you said you did because kind of your family was there, yeah?
Yeah.
Because of his career, basically?
Exactly.
That's very cool.
He moved out there for some work, and then the rest of the family stayed there.
Very cool.
Anybody else in the entertainment business?
No.
Still grandpa, huh?
Not yet, actually. But my brother is doing
business
in entertainment. Yeah.
There he is.
That's very cool.
Grandpa.
That's very cool.
You ever dressed up like him for Halloween?
I haven't.
Not a bad idea.
We have somewhere. We still have tons of memorabilia from his TV shows and stuff. And he's done a few movies. Car 54, Where Are You? And some other stuff.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That was an awesome show. Goddamn Munsters.
The goddamn Munsters.
Son of a bitch.
You were saying about your brother? PhD. Is your brother trying to get into the industry?
A little bit. He kind of dabbles in music, modeling, and some acting,
cool,
and some music videos and stuff like that. But he competes in MMA.
Oh.
So I get a little bit of
I think I saw that on your Instagram one.
Yeah. Yeah. He was competing in a fight, and he did really well. So he's a pro fighter and training all the time and training other people down in L.A.
Typically, you don't see models and MMA guys going hand in hand.
You know, his face still looks pretty
now.
Good.
Yeah, for now. Shit, better choose his path soon.
Right.
So we were talking about your progress over the last 2 years. We got sidetracked a little bit because I got excited about ice cream. But, you know, what has been the evolution of that?
So my training over the past, so often, I did have an auto-regulated approach. And I guess we can talk a little bit about what auto-regulation is.
Yes,
auto-regulation is the idea that we want to get the most of your training out of any individual session. And the idea is that we use RPE, which is a scale that means rate of perceived exertion. It's a scale from 1 to 10, and based on how you're rating a set of 8 reps or something like that, you can change the load. If you're feeling great, you add more weight. If you're feeling not so good, you add less weight. But it's an idea of objectifying, or at least putting a scale on those post-set feelings we have.
And it's basically based on how you're feeling that particular day.
Yeah.
And not really based off of previous workout sessions.
Right, right, exactly. Or even historical bests, like, percentage programs are based on, hey, what's my one rep max and what percentage am I using of that one rep max?
And that's just to fix the problem that this week you could do 80% for 5x5, but next week maybe you could only do 80% for a set of 3.
Right. Maybe even you got less sleep the night before. You went out and you partied or something like that. It's really going to impact
that's
your
training. It's hot outside. It's cold outside.
Yeah.
Anything.
So there's all these variables. So it's the idea of maximizing training sessions. So we actually switched from that approach to a percentage-based approach. And some of the things that are nice about that, especially if you have a coach, are that you don't have to be so analytical in the training session. So auto-regulation is great, and RPE is a fantastic tool, but a full auto-regulated approach can feel a little bit overwhelming with you having to try to rate the RPE in the set and then make changes from that. So
I think the RPE came from the military. Is that correct? I don't know.
Mike Tashier, he came up with the RPE scale, but I think he adopted it from the Borg scale, which is a it's that pain scale from 1 to 10 of how painful.
Yeah, and I think that's a military-based concept that's been around since like the 50s or something.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Almost like a little frowny face when you go to the dentist, you know, how
you see
how
the
bad
charts
is it
on the wall.
Yeah, how bad does it hurt, basically.
Yeah, and you know, the idea of like, on a scale of 1 to 10, can you tell me how hard that was? That's been around for a long time. It's just more systematized now.
So when you do a percentage-based program, and let's say you're supposed to do 80% for a set of five, is that
sure.
you know, it's normal?
That's well within,
Okay, so you're going to do 80% for a set of five, and you get to your like your last warm-up.
75%.
Yeah, and you're like, you know what, man, that 80% for a set of five is like – or for three sets of five,
sure.
is probably not in the cards today.
Yeah.
What do you switch to?
So there's two ways of going about that. Number one is suck it up and do it anyways.
Risk missing a lift?
Yeah. Yeah, risk missing a lift.
Miss a rep, maybe. Exactly. And maybe do three sets of four instead of three sets of five?
Exactly. So that's happened lots in training where you know, we've got something written on the page and it just didn't end up panning out that day.
Maybe your back's tight from deadlifting and you're squatting on that particular session and you just can't
tons of variables.
Get through it.
Yeah. So we have athletes that miss reps in training too when we write percentage-based programs. The problem comes not necessarily when you're missing a rep, but when you're consistently underperforming under what we've got written. Then we go in there and you know we make some changes. So if an athlete says, hey, I missed a rep, I'm like, all right, you know, shrug it off. Next workout, just go in and just continue. But you know, if we're finding like systematic under-recovery and poor performance, that's not just going to mean less volume overall. It's going to mean decreased motivation to train. They're starting to question what's going on. Why am I weak? Why am I missing reps?
Why is Bryce the worst coach ever?
Exactly.
So I hate
there's
Bryce
like Lewis. There's psychology associated with missing repetitions too.
Right.
So we try to avoid that as much as possible.
Everybody always asks about how you manage that 2-hour weigh-in for USAPL IPF meets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you tell people? Just the weigh what you weigh, or do you, you give them a percentage that they can cut safely and then recomp? You know,
So it's an individual question. I think for a lot of athletes, cutting to the top of a weight class is just not needed. It's just, you know, why are you going to do it so that you can hit a local state record that's going to last for 6 months before someone else comes around and, you know, out squats you by 2.5 kilos? It's just like chasing these tiny numbers and not really focusing on, hey, what's the big picture? Let's take a look at, you know, 4 years from now, where do you want to be? So, you know, if we're dieting you for 16 weeks and that's, you know, a quarter of the year that now we've got you in a caloric deficit that you're not in a totally anabolic environment that you can continue to grow from.
Losing gains.
Exactly. You're losing gains. So that's the one case of the athlete that, you know, doesn't need to make weight. We say, okay, let's just keep you in a caloric surplus, compete at whatever weight you're going to fall at, and let's get the most out of your performance on that day, whatever weight class you end up being. The other case is the athlete that has a chance to be competitive. They want to be in a specific weight class and come in at the top of 83 kilos or, you know, 93 kilos or something like that. In that case, we start a diet early out, and I don't like to see athletes lose much more than 5 to 7% of their body weight. Mm-hmm. We can do a little bit of water manipulation out of that, but you know, if you're throwing all these dehydration techniques and stuff, especially with a 2-hour weigh-in, you're going to tank performance.
Yeah, right.
And I know from experience, I've done that myself. I've been down that road.
You're going to probably still be peeing, you know, when you're trying to do your warm-ups and you're lifting, and you'll still be dehydrating further as you're trying to perform.
You try to catch your weight, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah. So I'll tell a story about when this went wrong for me. My home scale must have been off or something like that. I went to a meet, and I was 2 pounds over the morning of. So, you know, my brother helped me do some dehydration, make a makeshift sauna, and do a bunch of, you know, cardio, calisthenics, that kind of thing.
And he's like, wait, you're a pussy. You should be able to lose 20 pounds. That's what I do for MMA, right?
Soak it up.
Yeah. So I make weight, and I ended up cramping super hard right after my squat.
Yeah.
And
brutal.
My calf just locked up, and it wouldn't unlock for 10 minutes. You know, someone handed me a Gatorade. I'm just pounding Gatorade and trying to get my calf to unlock. And I just swore after that, like, I'm going to learn from this and never do this again. Sometimes, and some of the best ways of learning are learning by mistake and learning from that.
Well, the lifting and the environment of the competition is uncomfortable enough.
Yeah.
You know, try to make that day as comfortable as you can.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
So going back to the right way of doing it, you know, we have athletes start dieting out as long as we feel we need. I think losing somewhere around 1 to 2 pounds of your body weight per week is around average, somewhere on the lower end of that. And, you know, we figure out how long we need to start that diet to make sure they're going to meet their weight class effectively. And we can sometimes use water manipulation to lose an extra 5 or so, but I think it's risking a little bit if you're relying on water manipulation techniques to get to your weight class.
If someone's like 150 pounds or so, you're talking like 3 to 5 pounds is like the max you're looking at.
That's exactly right.
Someone weighs 200, they might be able to do like, you know, 5 to maybe 10 on the high end, right? Something like that.
And, you know, the more extreme methods you do, like sauna and whatever else,
right,
the more you're going to be able to lose. But the sacrifice is the more you're going to lose as far as
what's the most
goes.
You've seen, you know, with somebody being successful. Have you seen somebody drop 12 to 18 pounds and come in and still crush it?
Yeah. There's a lifter that went to IPF Worlds this year named, I think it was JP Koshy. I believe it was him. He lost 16 pounds, and I think he ended up going 9 for 9, just having a great day.
Right.
So it's possible, but we're just talking about odds here.
Right. Yeah. And everybody, though, that wants to justify a weight cut.
No.
Well, Dan
say,
Green
I
does.
I can do what he did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the outliers, and we're talking about, hey, let's give you the best chances of having a good day here, not run the risk of, you know, really screwing things up.
So would you say like, you know, maybe missing a meal or two and a little bit of water manipulation is probably okay, and then anything beyond that, you're probably going to perform a little bit less than the way you were performing in training.
So even if you drop a class and you drop 10 pounds or so, you're probably going to lose some performance anyways. And we have that real conversation. You know, if you want to drop a class or you're looking to
do you help
drop
people
10
select
pounds,
weights based off of that, you know, in for a competition, like, all right, you know, Mike wants to drop down to the next weight class. I hate that he wants to do that, but I'm still going to, I want him to be successful in the meet. So we're going to drop all his percentages, you know, for his openers by 5%, 4%, something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have to make that call kind of as we go along and still try to get the most of performance and not to be blind to the fact that, you know, they dropped, you know, 5 to 10 pounds to make the class.
Yeah, you can't ignore it.
Leverages change. You're in a caloric deficit. You know, maybe you have food gut. Feeling the pressure against your belt is going to be different if you're a leaner athlete.
That feels so good. Bench bagel.
So, I mean, obviously you guys are good coaches, and so I'm sure it doesn't happen very often, but if somebody has a bad meet, like, what's the management process like for that as a coach? Like, how do you help them deal with that and, like, their anger, frustration, disappointment, whatever?
Yeah, so it does happen sometimes, even despite our best efforts. You know, even the best coach can't get best performance out of every athlete every time. So bad performances happen, and we kind of have to talk about what happened and then try to figure out, okay, well, how are we going to make this better? What are we going to do next time to change things and make sure that we're going to get the best performance out of next time? So we talk to athletes about not putting all their eggs in one basket as far as like not getting all of their emotional fulfillment out of a best performance of the day, you know, and feeling like if they underperform, it's the worst thing, or they're a failure, or something like that. So, managing expectations is one of the big ways of preventing that in the first place before they even go into the meet.
On the front end.
Yeah, like, you're going to do great. Like, you're setting PRs. You're going to – so not setting them up for failure. But, you know, if we have a bad performance like sometimes happens, we will take an analytical approach and be like, okay, well, where did we go wrong? Did we overestimate as far as their attempts go? Were we too ambitious there? Did something happen with diet? Were you just nervous on the day? Like, for me – I've underperformed at Nationals and at the Arnold before, like below what I thought I was going to. So I've had that kind of a conversation with myself. And for me, it's a kind of a nerves and expectations of what I should be able to do on meet day. And so sometimes we have to have that conversation with athletes too. Like, you know, no one's expecting anything out of you. Just be you, go in and just execute the plan.
Yeah. But you know, with social media and everything now, people really are expecting.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are. And so they are going to have to deal with a certain amount of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we take steps to attenuate that as much as possible by focusing a lot on attempt selection. So a good friend of ours, Matt Gary, who is a coach in the USAPL and a great lifter as well, has done tons of research on attempts selection and what the best athletes are doing when it comes to making attempts in competition. And I think the stat is 6.9 lifts out of 9 are what the best athletes are doing. So they're making all their firsts, their seconds, and you know one of their thirds on average.
Yeah. Well, why not?
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think the Lillibridges said it really well. I think it was Ernie Sr. If you're going 9 for 9 all the freaking time, you're probably sandbagging.
Well, I think the reason why it's not higher is because at a lot of these top level meets, athletes are jockeying for that last deadlift.
Right.
So, you know, we have high percentages of misses on the last deadlift.
Yeah. But you can almost throw that last deadlift out because a lot of them are missed. You know?
A huge number are missing.
Yeah. Because, and then somebody's trying to close out a certain number too,
right.
Like a certain really 100, 100 number.
And a secondary goal, they'll maybe almost never meet the secondary goal because the primary goal wipes out their drive.
Sure, sure.
And you got like an 1,800-pound total or something, whatever the goal was, or you know, certain number that they're shooting for, and they're trying to pair it up with their last deadlift.
Right, right. So, so we've developed an attempt selection Excel spreadsheet, which is available for free if anyone's listening. You just go to thestrengthathlete.com/freebies, and you can find it there.
There you go.
Free shit.
So you just put in your one rep maxes, and it's kind of based on Matt Gary's research about what might be a good first, second, and third attempt. But it's not fixed, so there's kind of three choices there. There's a lighter choice, kind of the medium suggested choice, and a heavier one. So if you go in, things are blasting up, they're feeling great, you can kind of inch toward the higher end of those ranges. If you're feeling slow, it's moving, maybe take the safe attempt and just get the most out of the day. So, you know, it's tough sometimes having athletes halfway around the world and trying to be a meet coach on the specific day. But this is one of the ways we try to bridge that gap a little bit.
I know one survey you looked at a little while ago was PRs in the gym compared to meets.
Yeah.
What first, just tell us maybe what your thoughts are, if you should just be hitting all-time PRs in a meet, or if you should your third attempt should be something you hit in the gym, and then maybe tell us what you found out.
So meets are not necessarily a place to be going for PRs. There's way too much involved, and especially if you're a competitive athlete, if you're really looking to place and perform when it comes to comparing to other athletes, you need to be looking at how to get the most out of the day and not necessarily looking for PRs or a specific number. You have to be very flexible as far as, hey, what am I going to hit, and how does that compare to other athletes? And sometimes that boils down to great coaching and letting someone else look at the scoreboards and kind of pick what might inch you above someone else, even if that's well below your PR or maybe in some cases above your PR. And, you know, you just got to make this lift to get above the other athlete. So, it's not necessarily the place to be looking for PRs, although, you know, we have athletes that hit PRs on the platform too. But I think it's a little bit of a risk when it comes to attempt selection. Be like, your third attempt, you should hit a 10-pound PR. That's a risk. So we try to avoid that and tell them, if you're feeling great, hey, go above the plan. But if you're not, let's base things off of what we've done in training. And we give athletes plenty of chances to test in training and plenty of chances to use heavy weight. So it's not all low weight stuff. And oftentimes we work up to a mock meet 4 weeks out, or we use sets of as many reps as possible and figure out estimated one rep maxes based off of that.
Total like 2,100 in your garage, like Mike Desheer.
Mike is a beast. Mike, if you're listening, you're a beast. And animal. Thank you. Mike handled me at my most recent meet. He
was
down in Colorado Springs, so he was being my platform coach and choosing my
ran over you
for
with
me.
A truck afterwards. Sick fucks.
Hopefully we can get him out here now that he's back in the States.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Hey, where the fuck is he? He's in Denver?
Colorado Springs. Oh, about an hour south.
Maybe we'll go there, visit you, Bill Phillips, and
Shiri.
Yeah, you guys are welcome.
Everybody's there.
Alberto's. Alberto
Nunez. Oh, and Mr. Nunez.
Yep.
That'll be a fucking party.
Yeah.
Meathead party.
That'd be a blast.
Hell yeah. That'd be great. What's a general way that you have people select openers? When I started, my coach used to say, hey, let's just have you do what you can comfortably hit for a set of three as your opener.
Yeah, that's an awesome way of going about it. We either base it off of a percentage or like an RPE 8 to 8.5 or your best triple, somewhere around there.
Percent would 91, be what, 90?
Yeah. 91%, yeah. But we're looking for something that the way I often describe it is, if I were to wake you up at midnight, give you 10 minutes to warm up, you should still be able to hit it. Like,
Something you can hit under any conditions. And exactly. You don't have to worry about it. You don't get like a ton of anxiety over it.
Yeah. Unless there's extreme circumstances, you should not miss your opener. It should be something to build confidence, get you on the scoreboard, kind of set you up for success for the rest of the day.
There may have been maybe you missed a rack commander, so you
blew
it somehow.
Again, all the time.
Just you know,
you could hit it on your second if you fuck
something up. Yeah, there's just no reason to take risks on that first.
If someone does miss an opener on a technicality, do you sort of force them to take it again if they did blast it up, or do you just go up a tiny bit, or how do you manage that?
9 times out of 10, we take it again. It's right. Kind of playing the odds, and you know we don't want someone to bomb out. So if we go up and they miss.
Yeah.
Now it's a real uphill battle to make a third attempt.
Right.
Yeah. And now they're mentally flustered. They just missed 2 lifts in a row.
Yeah.
And they got to make the third one. Uh-huh. It becomes a real pressure cooker real quick, you know?
Yeah. There have been cases of athletes being successful, kind of sticking to the plan and just continuing to go up.
Yeah.
If the coach felt like it was just a technical error. Yeah. So I think that happened to Lane when we were up at the Arnold in March of this year on deadlifts. Coach just continued to go up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of a risk, but he knows his athlete better than anyone, so it's, you know, let's stick to the plan. And we ended up working out well for him.
So for yourself, you hit a 617 squat in the last meet, and you're just in knee sleeves. Where'd you start? What was your opener?
573 was the opener, and then jumped to 606, and then up to 617.
And I believe in training you said you did 585 for triple?
Yeah. So that was
in the squat?
That was a test of as many reps as possible. And that was 92% of whatever my one rep max that we used in training. So I hit it for a triple. And that was a really great confidence boost. So we kind of used some of the data from that, and that spit out an estimated one rep max. And by the way, for people listening, estimated one rep maxes are good tools to use when it comes to comparison. So is your estimated one rep max going up? But in most cases, estimated one rep maxes don't give you a good number to work with. No. It's not like, okay, if I can hit 585 for triple, I'm
that's
good for 640.
Based off a chart you can look up on Google or something like
yeah.
that.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's very different. Yeah.
There's a bunch of them, right?
Type of lifter, especially females.
Right.
They can handle a lot of volume, a lot of reps. Some guys can't. Some guys, like Mark, can handle fucking singles all goddamn day, but he can't even do a double with 90%.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Like,
right.
It's just so individual.
Yeah. And there's, you know, many different formulas as far as how to calculate that. So they disagree to some amount. And the further away you get from low repetition, the more inaccurate they get. So I did a set of like 12 on deadlift. It was an AMRAP. And it spit out like 800 pound. I'm like, cool.
Mm-hmm. 800 pound deadlift.
Yeah.
Put it in your Instagram profile.
Just
call,
mail.
Call it a day. Just
parentheses.
Just mail in your numbers. Mail them in.
Yeah.
And then with regards to, you know, how much weight you go up, I know you said there's a chart and there's some information on your website, the free bead deal. You know, in general, what percentage are people going up from their first attempt to their second attempt? Is it just a 3-5% deal? Or
so we like to see somewhere around 91 for an opener. We like to see somewhere around 95 for a second, okay. Somewhere around 100 plus for a third. Okay. Pretty standard, so RPE 8 to 8.5, 9.5, or 9 to 9.5, and
10.
Somewhere around 10. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On a good day.
So if you were to have a list of ugly lifts at the end of the day, you might have maybe 2 or 3.
Yeah, 2.5.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, by the end of the meet, you know, you went 9 for 9. Maybe you had one or two lifts that were just a little bit hard.
From what I
saw in the video, none of them actually really looked hard. They actually all looked pretty damn clean.
I was a little bit surprised as far as that goes. I mean, second attempt
it's probably all the steroids kicking in.
Second attempt on squat and deadlift moved slow, so we took a conservative third
and then crushed it.
Ended up moving really well.
Yeah,
that's not always the case, but. Yeah, we like to see that, and we like to see roughly even jumps between attempts too. So, you know, there shouldn't be a 20-pound jump between your first and second and a 40-pound jump between your second and third.
If anything, it should be opposite, yeah.
It's right.
Yeah, more like you're going to take the big one at the second, and you're going to chip up the third a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
We kind of run into this happens quite a bit here in our gym of, you know, people really just they just wanting a certain number. And they'll base their opener off of wanting that certain number. And sometimes they take that certain number on their second or their third.
Yeah.
How do you manage that with your coaching?
We try not to get fixated on numbers and just be like, if you're going to hit that number, you're going to hit it a few months from now anyways, or it's in the plan, in the works. You're just going to continue to get stronger. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always another meet, and don't get so fixated on, you know, having to perform a specific number.
Right. Yeah, if you were fixated on a 650 squat, then you wouldn't have done as well in the last meet.
Yeah, you would have hit 606.
Exactly. Maybe you opened at, 615, you know, and then maybe you struggled with 630, and then maybe, who knows how the meet. And then maybe you would have struggled throughout the rest of the meet because you would have been tired from all your squats.
Yeah, yeah. So some of those questions come up with individual lifts and with totals as well, too. Like, there was a chance for me at this last meet to – if we change my third deadlift up another 5 kilos, hit a 1,800-pound total, or up another 7.5 kilos and hit a 500 Wilkes score and the 1,800-pound total. So they asked me, Mike and Handy came up to me and they said, here's where the cards are. Do you want to go up? And at this specific meet, I just kind of wanted to stick to the plan, build confidence, go 9 for 9, and kind of miss out on that and just save it for a meet in the future. It's always going to be there, and if you stay healthy – and just continue to compete. It's coming.
Sex with no penetration.
What?
You talk talk more about that, because that was interesting.
Yeah, that was the seminar I went to with the Russians. They basically just said, a lot of their training and even sometimes the contest itself is
blue balls.
Yeah, like sex without penetration. You're stimulating, but you're not stimulating all the way. You're not going all the way.
And I don't
you're
get
just
it.
You're just
don't get it at all.
Does not compute.
No. Yeah, yeah. I know. It's hard. It's difficult. But no, I thought it was an interesting point. He was just basically Boris Shako and Misha were basically touching on the fact that they just don't really max out. They don't go all the way, in their training. And sometimes even the competition itself is that way. But Misha kind of said when he does his third attempt deadlift, that when he does a competition, that when he gets to the top, he goes, it's like, oh, and he just did it forever. And it was just... awkward. He had his eyes closed. Just like
really feeling it.
Started shaking, and we were like, "All right, buddy,
he's
we get the point."
It.
Yeah, yeah. He was way into it.
Unlike Arnold, who was coming all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
In the back room, and I'm popping up. Yeah, just coming.
He's coming all over the place.
Whatever, man.
God damn.
Never floats your boat.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Back to running each other over in the truck. The old Escalade.
That's weird. They're gonna get so many hits on Google of that now.
Yeah.
We just made somebody a lot of money.
All three of our lady listeners are freaking getting new
jobs. No, there's
jobs.
Seven.
Apparently it's, going up.
I don't believe them. I think they're fake accounts. I think there's still only three ladies.
The one person just reposting?
Yeah. It's the same chick with six different accounts. No, there's six of us. Not just me. I'm not the only pervert.
Besides neurosurgery and powerlifting, what else are you into?
Music and going out into nature with my wife. And we've got two puppies. A chocolate lab and a Belgian Malinois, and we like to get out and do some trips or go to this dog park. Or different
is that part
like that.
Of moving to Colorado?
Yeah,
I mean, there's nice places in California,
nature.
But
yeah, California's getting beat up right now with this drought and all that stuff.
Yeah,
too.
And the fires. We're surrounded by fires. I saw the news yesterday, and they're like, wildfire season, and we're in a drought. And then they show Sacramento, and there's literally a ring of fire around us.
Yeah, my car got so dirty.
There's four fires just trapping us. We can't go anywhere. We're fucking stuck in Super Trainer Gym.
Fucking soot everywhere.
Yeah, it's wild.
Meanwhile, over in Denver, it's like green and beautiful.
Everyone's just drinking fucking fresh water out of a stream.
Yeah, exactly. We just leave the shower running all day.
Fuck you, California.
Yeah, and just laughing about it, having a good time.
Yeah, but it's music and drawing and stuff like that. But work takes up a huge amount of my time.
Listen, play music.
Listening. Yeah.
What's some of your favorite music?
When I train, I like either dubstep, trap, metal, or combinations of those as far as genres go. Rap and kind of mixes as far as that goes. When I'm working lately, I've been putting on like violin classical music. Awesome.
Stimulates your
super low volume, just kind of in the background. Mm-hmm. And my wife puts on ambient music in the house, just kind of to have some background music, and it really makes a difference.
Music is
it's
huge.
Pretty cool.
Gives your life a soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly.
People all the time ask about like inspiration and. And it's always something I always kind of forget about is the music that we play in here.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely.
Well, yesterday when we were training and you turned it off, it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
We're in a building right now.
Yeah, it makes it, it just makes it easier. You know, it gets your body ready for what you're about to do. It gets you hyped up, gets you fired up. And You try to find a song with a good beat and something that's powerful, and you just fucking roll with it, right?
Yeah, well, our intern did kind of a research review of music and its effect on training. And, you know, surprise, surprise, it has an impact on training.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't always need the latest, greatest pre-workout to get fired up. You
can just
simply use some music. What about TV, movies? You're more into hanging out outside?
We play some video games. My wife and I do fantasy games. We've been doing Dragon Age Inquisition these days. It's a fun one. And, you know, watching Psych, if you haven't seen that. Uh-uh. It's a fun one.
Show.
White Collar and a few other ones. But
I've heard White Collar's good. I haven't seen it.
My work days are like, you know, 8 a.m. to like 9 p.m. So when I get done, I really just kind of want to spend some time with my wife. And
Puppies.
Relax. And
is she involved in your work at all, or she does something totally different?
She did before. So earlier in 2014, she did a lot of our billing, and she answered some questions and emails from athletes. But we transitioned more. We kind of automated some of that stuff.
Transitioned more, a.k.a. he fired her. You're
honey,
fired.
Honey, you're out.
Well, she was...
told this guy his bench sucked. You're done. You can't talk like that. That's great.
She's getting ready to start a grad program. So she's in a grad program now for education. And I kind of saw that coming. So we had to automate some of the stuff so that she wouldn't have to worry about that anymore. So
got an intern. That's a smart move always.
We have an intern. Yeah.
Smart.
It's really cool. He actually got college credit for it. Really? And he had to do weekly reports for us. And,
cool.
You know, we hand off responsibilities to him every now and then. And he loves it. He's TSA or die.
What's some of the other testing and surveys and stuff that you've done? You mentioned shoes. You mentioned low and high bar. You know, just go ahead and talk about that a little bit, and then if anything else you want to mention.
Yeah. So, you know, this is not like an official exercise science study. This is more observational. You know, what are people doing in training at the high level? So we look at footage primarily of competitions, and we like complete data sets. So if they have footage of, everyone's flights from 66 kilos or whatever all the way up to 47.
Yeah, like IPF worlds or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. So complete data set. And you know, we've taken a look at bar position. We've taken a look at stance selection on the deadlift. We've taken a look at stance selection on the squat. Shoes choices. Are they using an elevated heel or is it a flat shoe? And just try to get like a bearing on what people are doing, because while those are kind of bell curves or, you know, whatever the stats end up being, it's not like you should be wearing an elevated heel shoe, but it does give some context to the conversation.
It may be a trend.
Yeah.
It may or may not be the best thing, but it is the facts. It is what the best people are doing.
Yep. Yeah. So some of that stuff, and it sparks conversation too. So the interesting one for us was deadlift stance selection ended up relating to weight classes. So in the men, which we looked at, lighter weight classes, by and large, we're using sumo. And heavier weight classes, by a pretty huge margin, we're using conventional. So there's kind of a trade-off that took place there, yeah.
Which you might have thought about before, you know, when Mark and I do seminars or something, we kind of talk about, you know, maybe your gut's in the way, maybe you have something to push off of, maybe you're a little taller if you're a little heavier.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like simple facts like that, but then you kind of can quantify it.
Uh-huh. But it's like, hey, this is what's going on. It's not like now we can explain it.
Yeah,
so,
not any. Some tall guys or big guys can pull sumo and do very well.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But you know, I think at least as far as that one goes, the idea is that weight classes are probably height classes in disguise. So,
really, that's interesting. very interesting. Yeah.
If powerlifting was a mature sport, it would be more of that, because everyone's coming in at the top of their weight class, which means they're all really lean athletes trying to get the most out of it. And then probably at the heavier weight classes, you'd see more body weight anyways, but they'd be taller guys anyways. So it tends to be that shorter athletes may function better with a sumo and
not a ton of 5'5" super heavyweights.
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. Or if they did, they'd be as wide as they are tall.
Can't imagine.
We've known a couple of those.
And, what'd you see with, shoes?
So we looked at shoes in the squat, and it was pretty unanimous. I think it was like 90% to 10% athletes were wearing an elevated heel shoe on the squat. And this was raw squatting, so it may be different as far as equipped or single ply goes.
Right, raw
or
squats.
Even knee wraps.
Without knee wraps, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I was surprised by that. I thought it was going to be a little bit more 50-50, and it wasn't.
Yeah, well, it just seems like, you know, it's perhaps a little more efficient to get to depth.
Yep.
Having the elevated heel. If you're like me and you take a dump 11 times a day, if you're on the shitter and you just actually elevate your foot up, then you can kind of see that your knee raises up and that your hip is lower.
Huh?
Huh?
You took a shit with heels on?
No.
He puts blocks on the side of the toilet so he can get optimal
The squatty potty. You ever see that thing?
Is that real?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's real. Oh, it's real, buddy.
Optimal bowel movement.
I've researched it.
Yeah. It puts your feet up a little higher and you shit a little bit more out.
Natural shit position.
They got a great YouTube commercial.
To align your sphincter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. We're looking at it on the screen
by
there.
By the Target.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey now.
That's not too expensive.
Yeah, not bad.
That's it.
There you go.
Handcrafted.
Put your feet on that thing, and you just
$60. Let it roll.
Blast away. Goddamn.
Well, was it Kelly Starrett that was like, we should all be shitting on the ground?
Yeah,
like, yeah. That's kind of what Asian countries.
Yeah,
that's kind of what that does.
Yeah.
And then what about bar placement in the squat?
It's really hard to look at footage on that one because the camera angle is from the front, so we can't look at where the bar
can't
is,
really
spotters, and stuff like
that.
You got to
define high and low by inches, or every body type's different. Some guys have traps, some don't.
Yeah.
So we couldn't really come up with much definitive on that, but we were looking at it, and it seemed like people are settling on a middle bar position.
Right.
You know, not too high, and you can really only note the extreme. So
very few
people with that Olympic – you know, right up on the traps, and very few people with, you know, kind of gluing the bar to the very bottom of the traps down there.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
And then the other data that you, maybe you can kind of read it off if you have your phone handy, the data that you talked about with the percentage of deadlift for the females versus the males, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, what percent of each lift makes up their
total? So we had a coach, Eric Bodhorn, just today take a look at...
That's some cool names.
Yeah.
What's that name? Bodhorn?
Bodhorn.
That's fucking awesome.
Mm. Yeah, didn't you have Frisbee?
Frisbee.
Yeah.
What's up, Frisbee?
Reed Frisbee.
Fucking name.
Yeah. And we got Haney, who you guys have met before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bodhorn. He sounds like a tackle for the Patriots or something.
So he was looking at how much of each lift contributes to the total. You know, it's probably expected that we're going to be better at lower body movements than we are at upper body movements.
Right.
You know, we squat heavier and we deadlift heavier. We probably deadlift a little heavier than we squat generally.
Depends if you're on the Mark Bell program, the outbench your squat.
Outbench everything.
Bench or die.
But
that's just easier laying down.
Exactly. But the big surprise to me was that for female athletes, the deadlift takes up a bigger chunk of that pie. So it ends up being
female pie
42% of that pie.
Why are you talking about ladies' pies? I thought you're such a pervert.
Yeah, what are we talking about here?
Let me tell you something about lady pie.
Yeah. Damn. So yeah, it makes up a bigger percentage. The deadlift makes up a bigger percentage of their lift than the males.
Yeah, so we talked about maybe that's associated with how much muscle they're able to put on and the squat being a more, you need a good amount of muscle to be able to complete this. And some people can get away with a deadlift by technique and make up for it versus, you know, lacking a certain amount of muscle.
Right. Leverages, long arms.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, and some people talk about, being too tall or too lanky for a particular lift, but if they just add size, they can kind of, make themselves more powerlifting-esque and have better leverages.
Yeah.
So sometimes the females are at a disadvantage when it comes to that.
The drive home point is that, we like doing research about this to continue to give back and kind of just inform the discussion a little bit, regardless of, is this really going to tell us anything definitive outside of a research setting?
I'm a girl. I squat way more than I deadlift. All right. We fucking get it. We fucking get it, lady.
Yeah.
Noted.
Yeah.
You're broken.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Your deadlift sucks. That's the issue.
It can't be fixed.
And, we have to look at athletes at an experience level. Inefficient, young, new athletes are going to be totally skewed as far as that stuff.
Yeah, their squat's probably going to be even less of a pie.
Yeah.
You can grab any chick off the street. She'll come in and try to rip up 225 deadlift somehow, but probably can't even take 95 to depth.
Yeah.
If someone has never lifted.
And it would look bad.
Yeah, it would be terrible. Yeah.
Damn.
Well, women can sometimes cat back the hell out of a deadlift.
You can't really. Yeah. You were talking.
That's true.
When we did a bench video earlier with Bryce, he was talking about kind of like a bench becoming more of a magic trick than the other lifts. And you can't fake a squat. You can kind of fake a deadlift. Like, you can just wrench it. You little babies could probably pick up 100 pounds somehow. They'll fucking yank it up there, you know?
Little babies.
Yeah. Like, little kids, you know? Yeah. Like, they'll find a fucking way to lift something off the ground, but you cannot get someone to hold the bar on their back and squat to depth without a lot of practice.
Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, reminds me, one of the things we really focus on with athletes is technique. So as we're doing these weekly reports, we are asking for footage of the squat, the bench, and the deadlift, sometimes from a few angles, so we can give them cues on a weekly basis to work on things and make them better and just be technically sound athletes. And they are. Like, our athletes are doing a damn good job. Shout out to all our TSA athletes.
They better be listening, otherwise this thing's not going aired.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Throw this away. Every single one of your clients. Yeah, download.
I need proof.
122 clients.
Subscribe.
Right?
Yeah, we need those subscriptions.
That we're at?
That would make 124 listeners total. Yeah. There's two ladies out there, and that's it.
There you go.
Favorite food?
Sushi.
Oh, yeah. Damn. We should go hit some of that up.
Yeah.
Favorite song? Like, what's your what would be your like, if you had a walkout song, like, do you get to pick that at USAPL Nationals or something?
No, you don't. But at Raw Unity, I was really surprised by that. In 2012, I competed in Raw Unity.
Pretty cool.
And as part of the entry form, like, there's a spot for favorite song or song you want to lift to, and they stuck to it. Like, every time I walked out on the platform,
that's dope.
Yeah.
Raining Men.
So now the funny story, for my third deadlift. It was Katy Perry Roar for this last one.
Mark loves Katy Perry.
She's awesome.
Just she's something about you know, like, the self motivation, like, you can do it. Like, yeah. Kinda,
did it help?
I don't know.
You missed.
I don't know whether it helped. But
thank you, Katy.
There's a Skrillex song that I usually lift heavy to called "Try It Out." We listened to that the other day when I tried that 735 or something like that deadlift. So it didn't work there, but yeah, it's it's new stuff.
Like, yeah, it changes.
Exactly. Like, you can get too used to a song, and it doesn't have that, whatever that magic effect is on you anymore. That just makes you tingle.
I don't think that's true for Mark. He's listened to the same shit the whole time I've known him.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what is it that, like, do you listen to those songs, and you feel like that energy, like that inside feeling? Like,
I just like to you know, crank it up.
No, he's
like,
got a new one. He goes in a little bit of fads. Yeah. He turned on that, like, well, a little choir singing Metallica songs.
I have some major fucking technical problems. I don't know how to use anything. So that's actually, like, if I knew how to use
the brain.
Yeah, that too. If I knew how to, like, operate some of this shit, then I would play
iTunes.
A lot more music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I download stuff, but then I forget about different songs all the time. So it's like the similar songs are fucking stuck in my head. I've, like, broke my phone and had many different issues with it, and I have a ton of music on there, but not all of it is, like, currently uploaded. So I got problems. I got a lot of problems.
Yeah, I've known him for 10 years. Yeah. 10 years, like, right now, as a matter of fact. We're having our, like, friendiversary, and it's been the same few songs.
Hey, and by the way, we're celebrating the 100,000 subscribers for the YouTube
channel.
Yeah, hey. Mark Bell. Bryce, last lift you could do for the rest of your life, one lift, what would it be?
The deadlift.
I think we've all said that.
I think everyone's going to choose the deadlift. Yeah. It's it just makes you feel so strong, so, like, powerful to just move this object off the ground. You know what I mean? Squat's great too. Some people kind of have that analogy, like, you feel like you're being crushed and you come back from that. Yeah. So that's really
And we're back to that.
And we're back to that.
Feel like you're being squashed. I mean, crushed.
I think very few people are going to choose the bench.
Well, I agree. Yeah. Even Mark picked the deadlift, I think.
Yeah. It's just you versus some fucking gravity. It's very simple. You just got to try to bend down and pick the goddamn thing up.
Yeah, exactly.
And the danger factor is less. The bar's not on your back or over your face.
Yeah, true.
Danger.
Yeah, if you miss it, you let it go.
What's the goal, buddy? What do we got coming up? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to take over the world? We already know that. But,
yeah, so...
are some upcoming events and...
plans on taking over the world. No, I have... I've got a seminar in Canada, in Toronto, coming up in a few weeks here.
Where can people sign up?
You speak Canadian?
Yeah.
You can have a translator?
It's Canadianese, I think it's
how you say it. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Where in? Toronto?
No, Vancouver.
Oh, Vancouver.
Yeah. And then one in the Dominican Republic later on. We've got some friends there. So
that's cool.
That's a two-day thing.
That's great.
Nice.
And We've got Raw Nationals later, and then going to the Olympia.
There's info on those seminars on your website?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Find info on that. Yeah. I don't think I put it on the website yet.
What are you doing at the Olympia?
You have until Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, like 12:01 a.m.
There you go.
Wednesday. I get to work.
What are you doing at the Olympia? Just chilling, lifting,
gonna
working?
Going to be chilling. Cool. Yeah. At the Barbell One booth, so I'll be there and walk around a bit and say hi to a bunch of people.
Barbell One, is that the guy that made us that foam roller?
Yeah, it's, no, not that, but he made you the roller.
Yeah, foam roller.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Amazing. He's a really good guy. My face is on a foam roller.
And then I'm going to go out to Atlanta to see my other sponsor, Citadel Nutrition.
And Ludacris.
And Ludacris out there, yeah. We'll hang out, I'm sure.
Oh, you and Luda.
He's doing CrossFit.
Is he?
Puff Daddy, yeah. Ludacris.
Everyone now.
Ross Kevin Fit. Hart's working out, but he's not really doing CrossFit. I don't think Ross Fit could do that in jail.
Kevin Hart's hilarious.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
I missed him. He was here in SAC, I think, when I was in L.A.
Oh, he was?
I heard tickets were on Groupon and shit. Holy like, hella cheap,
Groupon.
I know.
Groupon?
Yeah, cheap as shit. Like, $15 to go see him. I would have laughed so hard.
How the mighty have fallen. Holy crap.
Yeah, poor Kevin. Well, he's filling out, like, an arena.
Right.
Comedians normally fill out, you know. Little comedy places.
Yeah, concert halls that are smaller. Yeah.
He's filling out Arco. That's 20,000.
Oh, my God. That's a lot of people.
So then Lane Norton is putting on a meet in November in Vegas, and I'll be back out there to help referee that.
That'll be really cool.
But, yeah, I mean, other than that, just continue to coach athletes and try to steal a spot on that world team.
Trying to get it to IPF Worlds.
Perennial. That's the holy grail right there for me.
As well it should be, honestly. I mean, I think that everybody across every federation should probably recognize that that's really the pinnacle of lifting because that's where the standards are the highest for everything.
It's also the closest thing we have to the World Games, the IWGA World Games, like the closest thing we have to an Olympics for powerlifting.
Right.
But other than that, you know, this yearly competition is the closest thing we have to
a World Cup or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whatever the yearly thing is.
Currently, because how do you stack up against some of the better lifters in the world?
It's darn close. Lane is the current 93-kilo champ, and there's, you know, Jesse Norris might be competing in that class this year. And we've got L.S. McLean, Chris Hunt, Garrett Botsy Bailey, and a few other guys.
Is Lane the world champ or
silver?
Silver.
But U.S. champ, and then he got the silver, right?
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah. Here in the U.S., to compete in the IPF, you've got to win nationals, and that's the case in a lot of other countries.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it should be, too, really.
So, I mean, Nationals is, like, October?
Yeah, Nationals is in Scranton, Pennsylvania, October 14 to
and
18.
And Worlds
like
is
that.
In Texas.
Yeah, this year it's in the U.S.
That's pretty cool, home soil.
If you guys are anywhere around there, really go check it out.
Maybe we should creep over,
it'll
Smiley.
It'll be huge. Yeah.
Worlds, what's that, 2016?
2016 in June or something like that?
Yeah, April, March, June, somewhere over there.
Yeah. So that'll be a good time.
Texas.
And
favorite quote.
Whoa.
Oh.
Look at him flexing his pecs.
Man.
Those are relaxed.
Got a favorite quote.
Flex the pecs. By the way, before I say my favorite quote, Mark, I quoted you from yesterday, and I told my wife.
Uh-oh.
It was hilarious. We just got done making that steak. He said, "Perfect glutes, perfect steak. Where does it end?"
That was a pretty good one.
That's the best quote ever.
We have one about, it was an Aristotle quote about habit. I forget it right now, but something about doing the same thing over and over and getting really good at it.
I got you.
Are you looking it up right now?
I can't.
It's
on the back of some of our t-shirts, but it doesn't cross my mind right now.
But it's on the back, so you don't read it.
Yeah.
If it was on the front, you'd memorize it right now.
Yeah.
Why can't I fucking think of it?
Well, there's a lot of answers to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Something about it being... God damn, I can't fucking think of it.
This Mark's
motherfucker
house.
Was very quotable.
Slinger Mansion.
Pretty prolific.
Yeah, Slinger Mansion was nice,
Mark's
wasn't it?
House is beautiful.
Watched a Ronda Rousey fight. We cooked up some fucking steak.
We did.
We did cook up steak.
And some,
Bryce went
Bryce
nuts.
Cooked
oh,
up
man.
Steak.
So good.
Goddamn chimichurri sauce.
That was amazing.
I can't believe I forgot to mention earlier, one of the big things I love doing is cooking.
Yeah, and you fucking do it well.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, it was great stuff. We got a stand mixer and started elevating my game.
Yeah.
But, cooking, grilling, all that kind of stuff.
We are what we repeatedly do.
That's the one.
There we go. God damn.
Excellence is not an act, but a habit. There I you think go. It's the rest of that one.
God damn. We're fucking dumb.
Yep, there you go. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is an act, not a habit.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
All right, man. Well, it was fucking awesome having you on the show. Tell us where people can find you. Give us your website, your Instagrams, your Twitters, your blah, 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 blah.
Plug, plug, plug. All right. So you can find me on Instagram at Bryce_TSA. You can find the rest of the coaches at coachname_TSA.
So many people are going to search coachname_TSA.
Chris, Reed, Hanny, and Eric are their names. You can find my YouTube channel at Bryce126. I'm going to try to get up some footage from this meet, and an interview that I did with Boris Shaiko will be up there soon.
Cool.
That was a lot of fun. And you can find information about being a coached athlete or what we do and what we're about at thestrengthathlete.com.
Boom.
Awesome. Wah, wah, wah. I would recommend looking into getting a coach, especially if you've never had one before. It's I think everybody needs a coach, and it's necessary as you're trying to learn and trying to figure things out. Why do it completely on your own? Why not have somebody fucking hold your hand and walk you through it? And especially somebody who's got over 100 clients, who's got a resume himself in lifting, and then also just has 100 lifters feedback on a consistent basis. That's pretty goddamn cool and pretty powerful. So look him up and check him out. Multiply your hustle, multiply your muscle, and may all your shits be tapered. I'm at Mark Smelly Bell.
I'm at Silent Mike, 2Ks. Check us out on Twitter, Instagrams, YouTube, Silent Mike, /95.
Now Periscope too, right?
Yeah, we're fucking Periscoping all the time. Yeah. Check that shit out.
I'm Jim McD, SCTV, everywhere that I would want you to find me. Follow the show on Instagram at Mark Bell's Powercast. Twitter at SGJimSack, Facebook.com/SupertrainingJim. And we are out.
Bitch!
Mark Bell's Powercast is a production of Supertraining.